When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Western history has led us to the most prosperous age in the history of humanity, and yet more and more our kids are taught to be ashamed of their country. Are you tired of Common Core, Howard Zinn-influenced revisionist history in our schools? Do you want your family to have fun learning about history that you can trust? Do you want your kids to learn to love history? Then DriveThruHistory.com is for you. The guys over at DriveThruHistory.com have created a world of entertaining, on-location, video-based courses for your kids. They've got ancient history, American history, biblical history, and world history. Perfect for all of you who find yourself homeschooling for the first time. It's fun, and your kids are going to love it. To learn more, head over to drivethruhistory.com/Zuby, Z-U-B-Y, where they've got streamed courses and old-school DVDs, and you can use the code Zuby, Z-U-B-Y, at checkout for 20% off any order. That's drivethruhistory.com/Zuby. Go check it out.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunting you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like a bang, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we have got on an entrepreneur. She is the founder and CEO of Real Fruit. And this is, of course, Afi Williams. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Zuby.
It's an absolute pleasure. So, Afi, I've done a very quick top line intro right there. But for people who are not familiar with you, tell them who you are.
Okay. I'm Afi from Nigeria. I run a company, a fruit processing company. We sell dried fruit snacks in Nigeria. I'm the first company to do so, and you know, have ambitions of just making Nigerian products and selling them across the world. So really focused on building a very successful enterprise that is impactful and empowering and creates a lot of employment. So that's kind of my quote unquote gig right now that I've been doing for the past 8 years and what I'm focused on. I've lived around the world. I was born in the UK, lived in Nigeria till I was 11, moved to the US and then South Africa. And then just after living in South Africa for 12 years, sort of, you know, felt this itch to come back home and start a business. And at 26, I quit my job and I told my mom I'm buying a one-way ticket home and I never looked back. And that's my story in a nutshell.
Wow. So tell me a little bit more about all these different places that you grew up in. Why were you moving around so much?
Well, I was fortunate that my mother had, you know, she was in the health, you know, health sector and really had an opportunity to get jobs across outside of Nigeria and around the world. And she traveled a lot. So I definitely sort of, you know, got the windfall of that. And I got the, you know, the opportunity to live in different countries because of her work and just, you know, sort of get an appreciation for different cultures and really be, I would say, more observant around about different, you know, people who are different to me, different to my way of life. And you know, sort of just even finding myself across all of that. So it was an interesting upbringing. I mean, it has its pluses and negatives. I know you sort of have lived in different countries as well. And it does have its pluses in the sense that you're sort of like able to, I would say, adapt more easily, but at the same time, you don't have as many roots. At least for me, that was one of the downsides, was that I didn't build enough roots in terms of having friends for a long period of time because I was moving quite a bit and you know, just nowhere really felt like home, I guess, till I came back to Nigeria.
I got you. So what was it that spurred you to go back to Nigeria? Was that specifically to start up the company, or was something else pulling you back?
Yeah, I mean, it was really just, it was really the gift of finding my purpose. I mean, I was working in a very, very safe environment, enjoyed my job. And my job was at the time working with entrepreneurs. So I definitely got inspired by just seeing all these guys who took a lot of risk, and their risk had like outsized impact in other people's lives, right? I really was attracted to that idea of taking risk and the reward being more than just, you know, sort of monetary wealth. That, you know, if you were successful, you would create this business and enterprise that would create a lot of jobs. And that used to really inspire me. And then I just had this thought while just reviewing and my life and just thinking about next steps. And I just started getting this idea of like, you know, I should become an entrepreneur. I should do it. I should bite the bullet and take the risk. And at that time also, I had an appreciation for the fact that I was privileged, not in the way people use the term today, but certainly had the privilege of being able to take this risk, because I knew I would not, you know, ever be hungry on the street. I knew that I had family and I had cushion, and I thought, well, you know, if this is what I'm meant to do, then I should get about to doing it. And I think that's something I am actually grateful for, because, you know, every day I wake up feeling like this is what I'm meant to be doing with my life. I have no doubt about that. I don't question that at all. And so when that buzz really hit, I sort of obeyed it. I didn't put it on the back burner. I started doing research. I spent a year doing research. I just became, you know, obsessed with the idea of just building this thing that was bigger than myself, and I took it on, and you know, sort of haven't looked back since.
That's awesome. And what is it that made you want to start a company that sells dried fruit snacks? What was the thinking behind that?
Well, there were a couple of things. One was around, you know, doing something that hadn't been done before. So we're the first company to introduce it to Nigeria.
Okay.
And the second was about, you know, building a business that would sort of add value locally to fruit. So where Africa is known for selling commodities and just raw materials, I wanted to sort of start a business where I could add value locally and then export and sell up, you know, sort of high quality products within Nigeria, but also outside. So that's how I settled in that sector. And it was a gift and a curse, because in the beginning, you know, launching something that, you know, being a pioneer in an industry takes a lot of time to sort of get people into the product, right? You know, people don't know about it. There's a lot of hesitation and rejection, and it took us like a good 3 to 4 years to sort of build the momentum in terms of, you know, being sure that we had a market and that people actually, you know, started to ask for the product. And we knew that, you know, it was sort of a brand that would survive. And that took a while. That took a lot of legwork, a lot of rejection, a lot of, you know, lulls in time. But I think it's been worth it, because now we're the biggest company in our subsector. And, you know, it's really hard to compete against us, because we've done a lot of the work.
That's fantastic. Well, congratulations on that success.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, something I'm really interested in as an entrepreneur myself is to spend a little bit more time on the earlier stages, the difficulties, the challenges, the rejections, all that kind of stuff. Because what always happens with individuals and companies and entrepreneurs is people see the end result. By the time people see something, there's probably already been 5, 10, 15, 20 years or more work that has gone into it before it came onto that person's radar. So it's very easy to look at an individual or look at a company and just say, oh, wow, this thing just came along and became big and became successful or whatever. But a lot of people, unless they themselves are entrepreneurs, don't understand the amount of perseverance and how thick a skin you have to have, and just dealing with rejection and knocking on doors that people don't want to open, all that kind of stuff. So can you talk us through some of the starting pains and the growing pains of it?
Yeah, I mean, this is a very interesting question, because I do think that there is, there's always a little bit of a tendency to sort of gloss over the years and just show the end result and the numbers. And I mean, even as an entrepreneur, 8 years in, I'm still sort of in the journey. Mm-hmm. It's still not all roses. I'm still not out of the woods. And while I think we have built a lot of success, there is a lot more to do. In the early stages, beyond just the challenges with lack of finance and, uncertainty around the market, et cetera. I think there are a lot of personal struggles that are more important, not more important in that sense, but they're equally important at the very least around, self-doubt, around, anxiety. People throw around that word a lot, but, when you're running a business and you sort of, quit everything and taking risk on mortgaged your home, that is anxiety, creating, an environment that creates a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of worry about whether you're doing it right. And I think building that confidence was something that took me a lot of time. I was in the very early stages in the first 2-3 years, I don't think I was confident around the business I built. I thought I picked the wrong idea. I thought it wasn't big enough. I thought I was investing a lot of my time in something that wouldn't amount to anything. And that created a lot of burden on me. And I think that that's important to note, because that sort of crisis of existence, if you will, as an entrepreneur is something that, everybody faces and people deal with in many ways. Some people sort of tend to hyper-focus on business, and then everything is about your business and you tend to just have a singular focus. You tend to not be the dynamic sort of interesting person you were focused. Some people, sort of let their health go. They gain a lot of weight. They start eating badly. They start drinking to cope. They start smoking to cope. There's so many coping mechanisms that are not healthy that people take just to sort of survive and strive through all the uncertainty. I mean, the amount of risk an entrepreneur takes, I think, is not appreciated, and it's very difficult to appreciate when you're not in it. So that did cause a lot of I would say grief for me in the early days. And you just get used to it. I don't even think that it goes away per se. I think you get used to rejection. I used to take rejection very personally. I used to wallow in a lot of self-pity. I used to think the world was coming to an end. I thought every problem was the end, and I thought I didn't deserve bad things to happen to me. And I had to build confidence, and I had to build a mentality that was more solution oriented, that was more positive and optimistic. And it takes time to do that. And that is very, very, very difficult to sort of maneuver while you're trying to also, sort of save face and lead and build a company. Mm. So those challenges were really, were really daunting. And I would say very unexpected. Nobody can tell you in advance how much you're gonna have to suffer really in entrepreneurship before you sort of quote unquote see a little glimpse of light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, most definitely. And even if people tell you, it's always gonna be more than what you think it is. Even when you get the forewarning, just like everything takes longer than you think it will, even when you bear that in mind, everything still takes longer. So
exactly.
Yeah. Were there any particular moments where was there any sort of singular or particular moment maybe where you were just like, what am I doing? Or, I'm doing the wrong thing. Or, this is that moment of like real doubt. Did you experience that?
Oh, absolutely. There are two really pertinent ones. One was, like I would say, between second and third year of business, I actually went and developed a whole new business plan for a much bigger like business idea, because I was just in so much doubt. I went, built a financial model, did a business plan for this bigger idea. And I sort of thought I would attach it to what I'm currently doing to give the impression that the business was way bigger and we had this big plan. And it was all a way to sort of, I would say, sort of like ease a little bit of the doubt and worry I had that I wasn't, building a big enough business, so I wasn't in the right business. And it did, like, it took maybe 2-3 months of my time away from my real business to go, sort of off track and build this entire sort of tangential idea. And it was really because I didn't believe that what I was doing was what's good enough to scale. And I think I would say, and then that didn't work out, obviously, because nobody's going to trust me with a much bigger business when you're just starting out one. So I quickly moved on from that. And there was another sort of, a secondary crisis I think most entrepreneurs feel, where you kind of feel too good for the business you're running. So you feel like, you know, you should be bigger than you are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at some point, I think 2 years ago, I just felt like, you know, this is not an indictment on me. It's the country I'm operating in. I'm too good. I'm really a smart entrepreneur. I'm a gifted entrepreneur. I work really hard. So the fact that I'm not growing is not about me. It's about the country. It's about the market, etc. And I was just losing interest because I just felt that I wanted to work on something big. I'm ambitious. I am dedicated, and I just felt I should be leading something much bigger than it is. And I felt I sort of entertained the thought of quitting. Mm-hmm. And I said, I would quit and not feel like a loser. I wouldn't feel like I was defeated, because I can stand and say I'm a great entrepreneur. It's not my fault. I basically came to the point where I had a legitimate reason and had peace that I could walk away from the business because I just felt like no matter what I did, it wasn't growing fast enough. And that was, something I think, you know, I mean, I felt a little bit heartbroken because I always thought no matter what I could, you know, withstand anything that was thrown at me. But at this point, I felt I was ready to move on. But luckily, you know, things started changing and we started seeing this big uptick and we started growing and we started raising external finance and everything sort of started, you know, coming together and reminding me that, you know, we have a lot more growth ahead of us and, you know, basically, you know, signaling to me that there was still a lot more for me to do. So those are my two real crisis moments that I felt, you know, I could walk away and, you know, I could sort of, sort of leave what I was currently doing.
Yeah, I hear that. No, it's difficult to, there are always those moments. And I think that is one thing that really separates individuals, mm-hmm. is the people who are able to persevere and show that grit, yeah. and determination to get through those moments where you're just like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? You start questioning your whole existence and thinking,
exactly.
Oh my gosh, have I made, you know, like myself, I went to start my music full time in 2011. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started and cool. I was, you know, I thought things were going to go faster than they yeah. did, you know, and I had some small successes here and there and I was doing stuff, but, you know, I was just, you know, especially financially and just being up and down all around the place. And with the way the music industry was changing, with downloads coming and streaming coming and all of yeah. these different things, I was just like, oh my gosh, have I made an error here? You know, in one way I felt like, no, this is definitely what I want to be doing. But in another mm-hmm. way, I was like, man, is it supposed to be this difficult? Is it supposed to be such a grind? You know what I mean? Like I'm.
You think you're tough, and you're like, but this is kicking my ass. But I'm a tough person. Like yeah. it does wear on you in all facets. You know, yeah. and I think there's also the idea of just being. You know, you give up so much of yourself, your personality, your interest. You know, somebody said you become this hyper-focused, like one-dimensional character where it's all about your business. And, you know, people talk about like life balance. And I mean, you know, it's nice in theory, but for the most part, entrepreneurs are working harder and working longer hours than most people. And they don't have, you know, the traditional work-life balance. So you are putting in a lot. And yeah, you're like, is it meant to be this hard? Am I like, what more do I have to give? Kind of, exactly. You know, what more should I give to make this thing work? It does get overwhelming.
And what was the turning point for you? What was the moment where you were like, okay, this is working, right? People like this. People want mm-hmm. this. This is something that can grow. There's demand for it, et cetera. Mm. What was the moment where you were like, okay?
I would say that there are two things that I look for. One was, you know, around, you know, obviously most, like a lot of entrepreneurs, I'm driven by a mission, I'm driven by a purpose. You know, people think, I mean, I don't know how many people think it's about money. Maybe in today's age, people just like ogle rich people and think, oh yeah, they're just doing it for the billions. It's like, no, when you're broke and you're like mortgaging everything, you're very rational. It's not about the billions. It's about being, you know, this internal motivation or this mission that's driving you. And I looked at my mission to always recharge. Why did I start the business? Why, you know, what purpose am I trying to achieve? And when I find that when I see that in the business, I am much more motivated to keep grinding. And for me, the biggest one is employment. And, you know, I'm from a third world country. I'm from the poverty capital of the world. That's just Nigeria. And I believe in creating, I believe in using enterprise as a way to solve that problem or chip away at that problem most I can. And when my business started employing a lot of people, started creating a lot of jobs, I just get this extra motivation to work, not just for myself, but for my employees. And, you know, there's also another sort of neat thing where, you know, the ideas in your business plan start coming to life. So when you wrote in your business plan like 10 years ago that, or 8 years ago that, you know, you would start selling on airlines, and all of a sudden you are on airlines and you're like, oh crap, like this is really happening. You know, the assumptions I had are coming. So it's something about just having things come to life that keep motivating you and just keep you going. You know, a lot of the companies that I thought 5 years ago I would want to start serving, we are right now. And nice. That gives me a lot of confidence that, you know, we are on track and you know, we sort of, we're on the right track, let's say.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So as someone who's gone back to Nigeria to start a business there and gain employees and everything, what are your thoughts on... So of course I'm also originally from Nigeria. You know, I'm mm-hmm. you know yeah. Like you, you know, Nigerian and British. So uh-huh. Nigeria is a country where I feel I find Nigeria to be a rather, like, I haven't spent a lot of time there. I haven't lived there, but I've visited many times. And it's one mm-hmm. of those countries where it feels very frustrating to me mm-hmm. because it seems like the potential is huge. Right. In so many ways, the potential of Nigeria is phenomenal. But at the same time, it's like there are just certain things that make it's like things are just so much more difficult than it seems like they should be or they need to be. So do you sort of feel that same way? And then also, what do you think can be done to help Nigeria specifically or similar countries to fulfill such potential? I mean, I think from what you've said, your own mission is that's a big motivator for you, right? To mm-hmm. help grow the economy and provide jobs and everything like that. So do you think that's the way forward, or do you think there are other things that need to be done?
Yeah, I mean, 100% agree with you. Nigeria is like the country of potential, but unfortunately, you know, potential has no value except it is sort of unearthed, except it's realized. And as somebody who's been in Nigeria for almost a decade now, you know, living in my adult life, I have seen a lot of sort of circular sort of, history repeating itself a lot when it comes to the economy and when it comes to how things are done, you know, that sort of prevents us from moving forward. So a lot of government policy, for instance, you know, things that were tried in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and 90s are just keep being repeated and keep giving us the same results. So this is a country of such industrious people. I mean, you come to Nigeria and I mean, everybody leaves saying, oh, you know, there's just this energy and this enterprising spirit. But life is really, really hard for people. I mean, you know, it's a country where people suffer so much just to get basic things, and it shouldn't be that way. And it's a country where people have so much potential to do more. But unfortunately, you know, we are sort of limited by, I would say, a lot by the government and the style of like a socialist sort of government that doesn't believe in markets and doesn't believe in, you know, sort of free markets and doesn't really believe enterprise is the best way to grow an economy. Mm-hmm. The Nigerian government believes that they are best suited to grow the economy. And so they enact these policies that ensure government control first at the expense of private capital coming in, at the expense of expertise coming in to grow the economy. You know, you'll have these really bad policies around subsidies and, you know, trying to control consumption, trying to control how people, what people buy and import, etc. And it's just so stifling to entrepreneurs like myself, but also just to the country as a whole, because you have a big population, there's a lot of interest. But if the, you know, if the macroeconomic policies are not clear and are not stable, people won't bring their money here. And so you start to then you sort of regress. And we're a country that's sort of addicted to oil revenue. So the government is 90% funded by oil. So it doesn't matter how the economy whether it's growing or stagnating or regressing, the government collects like only 5% of its revenues from tax, 90% from oil. So it's really dependent on oil. And then when the oil price crashes, as it has sort of in the last couple of years, we just see this acceleration, you know, or deceleration, however you want to put it, where things just start to unravel with the economy. So I think that is sort of the biggest frustration. And you ask about a solution, and really Nigeria and Africa as a whole is just not plugged to the global economy. That is a big problem. I mean, you have a continent of a billion people only contributing 2% to global trade. You can't in 2020 not have a lot more to offer the world, because that's how you create value. And when you create value, you're rewarded for it. So this idea that we were somehow structurally, disadvantaged because of colonization and all those stories that, you know, sort of people tend to accept and also present to the world as the reason why we're poor is just not, I mean, whether it's valid or not, it's not solving any problems. You know, you don't want the world treating you like a charity project, which is how Africa is treated. You want to be an investment case. You want to be a business case. You want to be an opportunity, not charity. And that's what African governments do. They go around, you know, saying, well, you know, poor Africans, you know, give us aid and all these things. And nobody benefits really, because nothing really changes. And the hard work that you need to do to plug into the global economy, you don't do. So you keep getting left behind. This is what I always say about a lot of these ideas that permeate with keeping people or making people feel like victims, or making a whole continent feel like victims. It's like, yeah, okay, they're victims and you've told them they are and you've said you're sorry. Well, what's next? Like, what is the solution? That's not going to change. You know, nothing changes. They're still responsible for doing what they have to do to sort of come out of that. So it doesn't, you know, the rhetoric and the empty words just don't, they don't change anything. And I think that is the solution that, you know, African governments need to see themselves and see their countries as, you know, active players in a global economy and have more to bring to the table versus think that the world is sort of extracting from them only. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a very contentious, viewpoint, but it's the truth. Like, I'm sorry, you're the poorest continent in the world. There's not much to extract. I mean, your GDP is not bigger than like New York State. It's a false narrative that the issue is that people just take from the continent or take from Nigeria. It's that we are not doing the work to build enough value to be sort of rewarded for it. I mean, I'm not trying to be oversimplistic, but the general gist is that we're not playing the game and we keep getting left behind.
Yeah. No, I understand that. I mean, I often say to people, look, on an individual level, on a collective level, on a national level, et cetera, history is immutable, and the past is the past, and we can all point out injustices and bad things that have happened in the past, how much bearing they have on things today. Of course, they'll have some bearing. To what degree is, you know, varies from issue to issue and is always going to be debatable. But the thing that is not really debatable, as far as I'm concerned, is that, you know, number one, you can't change the past. Number two, whining and complaining about it indefinitely is, you know, it might make people feel better. It might make people on an emotional level feel good or think that they're doing something, but it doesn't do anything, right? Actions do things, choices, decisions, things that can be done now in the present, looking towards the future and seeing, okay, what can we do now in 2020 to make, you know, the next year better and 10 years better and 50 years better, et cetera. That's really where the focus needs to be. And I think, go ahead.
Sorry, I find it, you know, this whole idea of, you know, you talk about victimhood a lot and you talk about responsibility. And I just don't know how we think or our society thinks that a culture where people are disempowered by feeling like things happen out of their hands. Or, I mean, I just can't fathom that people my age talk about colonization as the reason today, when you've had 50 years of African governments saying colonization is the reason we're poor. Yet, you know, there's numerous examples of mass corruption and all these things that have probably done worse. And our leaders have committed more atrocities than the colonizers. But today you get a sense of, you know, sort of comfort by saying something that happened in the past that is out of your control is the reason where you are today. I think it's such a disempowering narrative. And I think that's the harm, that, you know, people, what, you know, at what cost are you feeling good? You're feeling good at the cost that you're perpetually being told that you know, it's not your fault, but more importantly, you can't do anything to change it. And you build that where you keep, you know, the first then sort of line of reasoning is, well, who's to blame versus what can I do? I mean, the power to do something, the power to act. I was reflecting on that today, you know, as I was driving, I was like, even looking at people who are poor and rabid, the responsibility still falls on them to wake up every day, even if it's to go beg or to go work or do anything. Like, nobody is, you know, is, even if people pity them, the responsibility still falls on them. So I find that this idea that we should be going into the past to find things to blame is really just giving people, you know, sort of, it's really robbing people, I think, of their ability to create solutions. I don't think you can be solution oriented when you're always saying, well, that guy's at fault and that person is at fault. And you know, and you're not really, and again, you're sort of getting some sort of reward or incentive for pointing fingers and blame versus finding solutions. It's kind of warped in my view.
Yeah, no, I think you're completely correct. And, you know, even in cases where it's true or it's true to a degree, what you've said doesn't change, right? Not everyone, you know, individually, collectively, not everyone is, we're not all, you know, bad things happen, you know, bad things happen in history, bad things happen to individuals, so on and so forth on all sorts of levels, right? But ultimately, that's still that person's life. It's still that person's responsibility, or that nation's in this case. And you can acknowledge things and you can have sympathy for things and you can discuss things and get around issues. But again, I think people are always wanting to look back and point the fingers outwards rather than wanting to look forward and point the fingers at themselves and look at themselves in the mirror, look at their own community in the mirror, look at their own country in the mirror and say, okay, what can we do? What can we do now? What can we do in the near future that's going to make things better for us, make things better for our future children, future generations, and so on, rather than constantly looking back and saying, you know, well, in 1800, this happened, and in 1900, you know, we should know history so we don't repeat the nonsense.
Yeah. And people always, I remember once somebody, you know, there's a time where I was like, you know, I feel so privileged for, you know, being a have versus, you know, a have not in Nigeria where there's such inequality, et cetera. And somebody asked me on social media, it's like, what are you doing with all this guilt you have and you're expressing? What is it doing? What is it solving? And it really hit me as, you know, sort of a, you know, force me to interrogate, like, you know, is it something I'm doing to make myself feel good? Or, I mean, there is expressing sympathy, there is expressing compassion. But, you know, you can get addicted to the idea that you feel for everything and thus you're better. Yeah. But you're not doing anything, really. Yeah, you're just, you know, sort of getting a hit of feeling like I'm a good person because I feel bad. Mm-hmm. And since that person asked me that question, I thought about it strongly. And it's like, well, turn that into a more productive emotion or a more productive action. Like, your guilt does not do anything for anybody. It just makes you, you know, at the very best, maybe even makes you feel, you know, depressed and unable to do, and removes, you know, your sort of any sort of action-oriented idea you may have had. But at the very worst, just makes you feel good for a few seconds and you move on because you can't do anything. And I thought that was so, you know, that was such a a poignant question the person asked me, and I took it to heart, and I said, well, you know, just be careful that all this guilt is not about you, you know, and it's not just about making you feel good, because you know, humans, we have ways of sort of like convincing ourselves of so many things, for a hit of sort of morality, as it were. So it's really worth checking that, you know, the idea that compassion and sympathy and the worst, empathy, can actually be quite negative, you know, negative ideas. People just think you're a terrible person for saying that. But I'm like, you know, you can claim to have empathy for things and it becomes very self-serving. And then you become this person who just wants to be known to have empathy for things. So you are then sort of co-opting all these ills to just make yourself look good.
Yep, that is that devious.
That is a lack of self-awareness, and that is not a good thing. So, you know, not all these things that sound good that just, look like compassion and passion and empathy and morality actually lead to any positive or tangible outcomes for the collective, even the individual. Mm. So yeah, I spend time thinking about things.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. I'm just sitting here nodding. I mean, number one, you've got nothing to feel guilty about, right? So this idea of people, like, you feel guilty when you've done something bad. If I do something wrong, or I hurt somebody, or I do something bad, then that's the correct time to feel guilty. I'm not going to feel guilty for having whatever privileges I have, and I do have them. I'm not going to feel guilty about that. Why would I feel guilty about it? And then also, you know, this is something I said a while ago. It went very viral, but I said, you know, nowadays people care more about feeling good than doing good, right? Or people thinking they're a good person rather than just being a good person, right? This whole virtue signaling, I'm going to self-flagellate and I'm going to acknowledge my privilege and acknowledge my guilt and I'm going to put
the
right...
But never give up that privilege though. You'll never give it up, but you'll say it. fascinating thread I saw about this guy who was like, you know, I just have to come on social media and admit that the house I'm living in is because my mother gave me a $30,000 loan and, you know, her ancestors were slave owners. And I'm like, okay, the logical conclusion is give up the house if you feel so badly. But there was no talk about living up the house.
Never.
I'm like,
never.
Well, invite some poor people in then. Exactly. Let them live with you. No. Yeah. It ends at just, you know, the show of it all.
Yeah, the celebrities are the worst. The Hollywood celebrities, when they come and, you know, they'll fly in their private jet and start lecturing you about
like
climate change. And they'll have their 10 mansions sitting there empty while they're telling you about, you know, admonishing you for wanting tighter.
Or like abolish the police while my like private guards will tase you. Like, if you
it's amazing. Yeah. I love when people see through it. So I think we're very much on the same wavelength.
Yeah. We're all getting to that point where it's like, hold up, this doesn't add up. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious to know more about the, we've talked a little bit about setting up the company, but I'm curious to know more about the product itself, and why you chose that and what the response has generally been. Because if you're starting a company, there's a whole bunch of things you can do. What made you go, you know what, I want to sell dried fruit?
Yeah. So we picked dried fruit because one, I think at the time I just picked it because I was looking at the fruit value chain and just looking at that space, and I wanted to do something with fruit. And so I settled in on dried fruit primarily because I just thought, oh, no one's really doing it. So I'll be the first and I'll just, you know, sort of run off with this first mover advantage, as it were, which actually first mover advantage is more like, you know, you slug for 4 years and like you know, you sort of create the market and other people come and copy you pretty much. But I mean, in our case, it sort of helped, but that's why I picked it. And there were also not very many sort of healthier snacks in the market. And at the time in 2012, there was just a greater awareness about health and fitness. People were, you know, looking for more natural options. So, you know, we rode on that momentum. And then what I also liked about it was that it was global in nature. It wasn't really just a Nigerian product. We could sell it across the world, and that was always part of my aim, and still is till today. We actually sell our products on Amazon, and And funny enough, during like COVID, we had our highest like rate of sale.
Oh, wow.
But unfortunately, we've not been able to restock because of the, you know, interrupted air travel and things like that. But yeah, so we're really trying to push our products outside of Nigeria. We still want to be global, and we believe that this kind of product has global appeal. And it sort of speaks to that, you know, what I spoke about Nigeria and Africa as a whole not being global in its ambition. Like, I have global ambition. I want to build a business that is globally successful, that you know, a lot of products that I eat here in Nigeria are not made here. Mm-hmm. They're imported, and I think I could sell my products too across the world. So that's kind of how we selected that and why we're still pushing that. And the market continues to grow. Zubi, when I first started tweeting at you before we started following each other, I used to say, well, you know, Zubi, your market is in America. It's in Texas. Like, go there. And, I kind of feel not the same way, but it kind of is that, like, you know, there's a bigger world out there, and I want to go, and I want to keep pushing to get there and cross that barrier and sort of prove that it can be done, right? Mm-hmm. And sort of create that example that Nigerian companies can really sort of find success outside of Nigeria as well.
Yeah.
Especially in America.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be powerful. And I mean, the fact that Nigerians are everywhere. You know, I think
we are certainly
maybe amongst all countries, but certainly amongst all African countries. I mean, the Nigerian diaspora is something else. I've been to 33 countries. I've met Nigerians in all of them.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think every, like, even the random places I've been to, like Slovenia and Serbia. Like,
yeah, exactly. My husband was like, went to some village in Sevilla or something like that, and he just like saw two guys, and he's like, "You guys are Nigerian," and they start talking up like this random village. He was there for a wedding, and it was like, "Yep, yeah, we're in all the nooks and crannies of this world."
It's so wild. Yeah,
we're all represented. Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. So, what have you got? Once the COVID situation recovers, what have you sort of got lined up? Have you got new products coming out? Have you got other things that you're branching into? What's on the horizon?
Yeah, we're actually looking to basically sort of, I would say, set up our formal retail in the US. So once things sort of ease out, we want to move a bunch of product and basically begin a sort of hybrid model of an e-commerce play and, offline sales, and really start to build out a retail network there. I think there is, you know, we've seen enough signs that our products are well received. They are liked, and I think, you know, there's a big enough market for us to chase. So I think that's something that we're going to be doing early next year.
Okay.
And that's really just going to take us to a whole new sort of, the horizon, really. And I think it's something I've been looking forward to doing for a while. And I think the timing is right for us to get there. So
awesome.
That's pretty exciting. Yeah. And we're launching a bunch of other products as well. So we want to come in with a bang.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And is all the fruit from Nigeria?
Yes, for the most part. I mean, West Africa in general, but most of it is from Nigeria. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. No, that's exciting. That's exciting.
It really is. Yeah.
No,
especially in these times where, you know, I hate to bring up the pandemic. I know on YouTube, I watch a lot of YouTube, so there's some words people don't talk about,
because
their videos don't get striked and stuff. But
yeah.
I mean, the kind of colossal damage economically. I mean, people, I remember I was attacked for saying things like, why would we take such a harsh, like, you know, hammer to nail approach to something like this that was so untested. But, you know, the economic bloodletting, the fact that, you know, there's a whole generation of children who have, you know, whose learning has been stunted, college kids getting graduated without learning anything. I mean, the cost of this thing has been so, you know, enormous across the world. I mean, people talk about, you know, the developed world because they can sort of recover. But for third world countries like ours, it is going to be a while before we even get to levels. I mean, we're already like sort of suffering, but, you know, we have even regressed even more. And for me, you know, I want to sort of maintain an enthusiasm and an ambition that doesn't really, you know, sort of flies in the face of that narrative and that sort of, basically the outcome for most businesses is that they're shutting down, especially small businesses, is that they're sort of letting go of employees. And I kind of want to do the opposite. I kind of want to rebel against, you know, this unfortunate thing that we handled so badly as the world. And there's no justification. I don't think anybody will convince me that there was any sort of like justification for taking such harsh harsh approaches to sort of solving this problem that who knows whether or not it was solved by any of this, you know, sort of extreme measures. But the impact, like nobody's counting that. Nobody's talking about that. People are being left behind and they will not catch up. There have been sort of, strike to people's lives that will take generations to overcome and overturn. Yeah. And I'm not trying to be... exaggerate, but no, it is the truth.
It's true.
People just don't think about when you're on social media. You are really just talking about a superficial, the trite, absolute, sorry, I get really heated about this.
That's okay. I hear you.
The trite conversation about, it was the economy versus lives. I was
you want to kill grandma.
That was the headline.
Affy doesn't care about people's grandmas. You want everybody to die.
I sort of attacked for saying things like, you know, people are quote unquote, I hate this word, but weaponizing pictures of nurses, who had scars on their faces from wearing masks. And it's like, but nurses are going out of work. My sister's a nurse in the US. Mm-hmm. People were getting laid off because people weren't coming to the hospital.
Exactly.
Actually, the bigger impact was that people were losing their jobs, losing their livelihoods, and not that they were being put at risk because, or that, you know, they were being hard done by because they were wearing protective gear to solve a challenge. They were actually providing the solution. They were not meant to be like the face of fear. They were meant to be the face of, you know, courage and bravery. And it was used as though they were really like going, you know, they were people basically. I'm not saying they didn't risk their lives I'm not saying what they did wasn't courageous. I'm just saying the way the media painted it was to instill fear in us, not to give us hope that there were people risking their lives to create the solution. And then on the back of that, a lot of nurses, more nurses were out of work, didn't have hours than did. And so when people, and then the ripple effects of all of that, people just don't talk about. And I feel, you know, it was such a, started opening my eyes basically to how we needed, I know we're going off topic, but
no,
sort
fine,
of disintermediate the news and just not focus on the mainstream media, because the media is literally crafting how people should think and robbing them of their ability to think. And at the same time, being extremely totalitarian about which ideas are considered deemed evil and which are, you know, maybe, which are innately good because they just, you know, parrot what is being, what the narrative of the day is. But the alternative is not debate to spur the best solution. The alternative is like you're being evil or you don't care about people's lives, or you don't care, you know, you care about money only, or because you're an entrepreneur, you care about your business. And it's like, no, I employ people. I know what people do to survive. To rob their livelihoods or their source of livelihoods from them is.
Do you know one of the biggest, the most ironic, there's a lot of ironic things about all of this, but one of them is the people who are going the hardest on this are the people who claim to care about jobs and, income inequality and small businesses and this and that, right? And everything they've done, all they've done is, this has been a gigantic wealth transfer. Like, I have no problem. I have no problem with billionaires personally. But for the people who apparently do, you've just facilitated like the greatest wealth transfer from small businesses and individuals to the billionaires and the giant corporations. I mean, Amazon is booming right now, you know? So Walmart is booming. All of these things are booming, whereas the person who cuts your hair down the street, or the small independent musicians, or the people who are doing this or doing that, like these people are getting decimated. The small restaurants, everyone's getting decimated.
And it was like, stay home and save lives. And it's like, no, honestly. I mean, let's not talk about the mental health. Everybody talks about mental health.
Seriously.
I'm like, If you read any stats on depression, suicide, anger, all these things, I mean, completely sort of through the roof during this period. I mean, people were struggling mentally because it was imprisonment. Mm-hmm. And people use that again as a way to be, you know, have this moral high ground that if I'm staying home and I'm wearing this mask and I'm not doing anything, I'm not living my life and sort of, you know, gaining 10 pounds because I'm sitting at home doing nothing, I'm somehow, you know, a better person. Mm-hmm. And that's somehow an ideal or somehow a fair price to pay for what we don't know is a pandemic in quote, because that was just, you know, I mean, when you look at the numbers now, you wonder, you know, if we didn't overreact. But I mean, it's just like that, all of that, those are consequences and they're real. And I think, you know, there was no space to even talk about that or debate that. And to your point about wealth, I asked, you know, I was speaking to my cousin about this and he was like, well, all the government stimulus is going to end up in the stock market. So, only, you know, invest in stocks and then, you know, sort of that's your windfall. It's not really going to trickle down to the average person. And again, like you said, it's always, you know, the media just give people very creative ways to sort of, you know, get this dose of morality that we're all looking for and a very simplistic way to feel good about ourselves. So if you paint the picture and you give someone a simplistic sort of like idea of you know, sort of hero versus villain. If I say something that makes me look like a hero, I am. And if I don't, I'm a villain versus it's like the world is so complex and things are so complex and this situation was really handled like such an extreme that I remember you tweeted about I don't know, it just hit me once when I read your tweet about politics and how you don't trust, like, not just that you don't trust politicians, we all know that nobody trusts politicians, but that like the man next to you, your neighbor, is more impactful and useful to your life, something along those lines, than a politician. Like you would trust a politician more. And this, I think this whole crisis exposed how they don't have all the answers. So it was very telling that we need to trust politicians less. We need to, you know, we need to not give up our freedoms to people because they don't know it all.
They
know very little.
They're smarter than us. They're no smarter than us. Like the average I'll say it straight. Like I'm way smarter than the average politician. Like they're not more intelligent. The incentives are worse, right? The incentives. I have no incentive. Yeah. I don't have an incentive to lie to people. I don't have an incentive to strike fear in people or to split them and divide them and put them the media has an incentive. Politicians have an incentive. I don't. Like my neighbor doesn't. Yeah. Like we're just chilling, you know, we can just have an honest conversation and say, okay, like, you know, we think this, we think that, but everything, once it gets politicized, then, you know, the honesty is gone. As soon as people are incentivized to lie, incentivized to create narratives and stick to narratives, incentivized to manipulate science and manipulate numbers, however they want, manipulate headlines and just feed into this fear machine. I mean, the media literally tells people what to care about. Like if they decide tomorrow that, okay, we want everyone to care about climate change, they will just shift the narrative and people are suddenly freaking out about climate change. Then a month later, they can say, you know what? Let's go back to coronavirus. We want to scare people about, and then they start talking about the second wave. They start talking about spikes, right? They start, and then they can, actually, you know what? Election coming up. We want people to freak out about racism. Let's find every story. Let's find every incident of racism and let's explode it on social media. Let's put these images up and these videos and let's just get people thinking that there's a new epidemic of racism and, you know, hate crimes going on. And they can do it with anything. And that's the thing that's terrifying. That's actually scary.
And that's why, and I think this crisis has created such a distrust, I think, for any thinking person in one institution. So the WHO, the CDC, I mean, all sorts of like global institutions, you realize these are people run by people. So the institutions are run by people who are looking out for themselves first and looking out for playing whatever political game they're playing. And it's not about, you know, the society at large. And two, the media, I will not believe anything mainstream media says. Absolutely not. They could be 100% truthful and I will not believe them because they aren't truthful. And now they're only incentivized to do things that basically bring, clicks and views to them. And so they will lie and manipulate and craft and in very devious ways too. So it's not even like it's innocent, you know, sort of hyperbole, et cetera. It's literally reframing. And I'm like, well, you know, I want to think for myself. I want to come to conclusions by myself. I don't want to be told, you know, I talked about this too, when, you know, a major artist brings out like a CD and immediately there's like 50 think pieces about how this is just a cultural moment for the world. And it's like, you listen to the album and you're like, oh, it's a pretty average album, but already you're just, you know, sort of pummeled with all sorts of opinions around how it should be great and the world should, you know, like, you know, this is such a brave thing, or, you know, this breakthrough idea. And I'm like, well, you know, it happened in a room, they've collaborated, there's a lot of marketing people, you know, pushing the envelope. I'm sure it's not as deep as it's being made out to be. And, you know, you can't even have an alternate opinion that something is average when 100 like media outlets are telling you like it's the best thing since sliced bread. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can't think for me, and it should be okay for me to not appreciate something. There should be like diversity of thought and opinion. And
how dare you?
And it should be welcomed. Like, I don't need to follow suit. And, you know, I think we just accept it till you start seeing the trends and you wake up and you're like, oh crap, I've just been a sheep pretty much. And it's, you know, it's pretty frightening, because most people just, you know, carry on, you know, without actually really stopping to interrogate.
Yeah, it's true. I can't nod my head any harder. So, Afi, where can people find you online, and where can they find your company and your products online?
Yeah, so my website is, my company is called Real Fruit, www.reelfruit.com. So Real Fruit, spelled R-E-E-L. On social media, I'm most active on Twitter. My handle is Afi Superstar, AFFISUPASTAR. I love interacting with people there for as best as I can. That's, you know, that's where to find me. We're on Instagram in terms of our products as well. So if you just Google Real Fruit, you know, people can reach out to me and connect with me that way.
Awesome. Afi, it's been a pleasure to finally talk to you. I was going to say in person.
Yeah.
This isn't quite in person, but it's better than Twitter. So.
Yeah, thank you so much. I was like, let me, you know, when you put out that post about, you know, who do you want me to talk to? I was like, let me just shoot my shot. I really don't do things like that, because I'm opinionated, but I'm not like a super, super pushful. But I just said, what's the worst that could happen? I mean, you're going to get a ton of, requests, and you're not going to even see mine come up. But for you, when I got the DM, I was very, very excited. I thought, I was like, wow, okay, that's fantastic. And congrats on all your success, Ruby. I mean, I follow I'm really, really inspired by what you're building. I think you're doing something fantastic and amazing in terms of just like growing your brand and really, you know, building a business around, you know, being authentically yourself. I think that's fantastic. It's exciting. I don't know how you do it, but it's great to watch. And I wish you a lot more success. And it's been fantastic to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it. No doubt. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang. Y'all gon' remember the name.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.